south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. I was talking to a U.S.-based physician the other day. She came down here looking for her Plan B, too. What's that tell you? She says the American medical system is irreparably broken. She also said most of the national healthcare systems in the world are broken too, like the one in the UK and Canada. Now, she says she knows a lot of Canadian physicians, and she receives this quarterly report that comes from the Canadian government national healthcare system, and it lists a lot of medical stats and dats. Then she took out her smartphone, got on one of the Canadian national healthcare websites, and showed me that report, pointing out last quarter's Canadian healthcare emergency room stats. Turns out, and you're not going to believe this, but I saw it for myself, there's a 34-hour wait if you're a walk-in to the average Canadian hospital emergency room. So what happens if you're in really bad shape? Well, if you arrive in an ambulance or are unconscious, having a heart attack, full of blood, or your guts or eyeballs hanging out, you're put on a priority list and could get in right away or in a couple hours. But if you just broke your leg or arm or sprained your wrist, fell down, had some serious gastric problems, whatever, and came in under your own steam or with a family member, you're looking at an average of a 34-hour wait. That sounds totally unbelievable, doesn't it? Now, understand those are quarterly statistics for the whole system, and sometimes it might be a 15-hour wait, sometimes 40. Bottom line, if you're in Canada and have a very serious injury, do call an ambulance. Go to the emergency room. You'll get in right away. However, if you sprained an ankle or need some stitches, you might as well walk right into the waiting room of the nearest doctor's office. Don't make an appointment over the phone, because that'll be a couple weeks too. Now, just contrast that to the emergency room of a first-world-style hospital here in Latin America. No matter what your problem is, if you're a walk-in, you'll get taken within 5 minutes, and if you come by ambulance or it's very severe, you're in there even faster. So you might ask, what's this female physician doing down here in Latin America? Is she a do-gooder? Is she on some kind of mission? Is she with Doctors Without Borders? Well, 25 years ago, she did all of that. But now, she says, after being on the U.S. medical treadmill so long, she wants out before she's totally burnt out on the paperwork and Obamacare and whatever Trump care turns out to be. So she's down here in Central America looking to get her residency. Guess where? Guatemala. Yep, she's been listening to the show. So by her own admission, she's nearly burnt out on medicine, and she's only 48 years old. Oh, and here's what else she told me. According to JAMA, that's the Journal of the American Medical Association, in America, and there's 330 million Americans, right? When talking about prescription medicine, there are 12 scripts, that is, prescriptions written each year per capita. So, do you get your quota, that is, 12 prescriptions a year? We're not talking about over-the-counter stuff like Pepto-Bismol or Preparation H. 12 prescriptions a year per capita? Hard to believe. Well, maybe not. And those stats are broken down state by state. The worst state? You wouldn't believe this. Kentucky, with something like 16 prescriptions per capita written a year. And the states with the least prescriptions written? Alaska, for one, but you might have figured that. So, with 12 prescriptions being the average, that would mean some people don't get any prescriptions at all, and some double or triple that. So, who's taking all those prescription pills? Is it old geriatric people in nursing homes? The overweight? The obese? Maybe not. In fact, it looks like the whole damn population up there is addicted to one pill or another. They certainly push that crap hard on TV. It's like every second or third commercial, right? And how do I know that? Well, that's because down here in Latin America, they get all kinds of American TV stations. Yep, the network stations, ABC, NBC, CBS too. Of course, they're getting the feed not from Albany, New York, or Minneapolis, but from my jammy. Yep, would it surprise you to know that the U.S. ABC, NBC, CBS affiliates are all coming from my jammy? The exception to that rule is if you have cable TV and live in Mexico. Then, those big three U.S. networks have their affiliates coming from L.A. Makes sense. Those are the biggest Latin population centers, right? And funny enough, the feeds for those stations come down here to Latin America live, so There's no subtitles or translations. They're all in English. So then you might ask, why would they have these stations on TVs here in Latin America when they're not in Spanish? Who'd watch them? Doesn't seem economically feasible, does it? And where are they going to get the ad revenue? And it's not like you have to pay an extra premium to get them either. You get those three English-speaking channels bundled in with 50 or 100 Spanish-language stations with every basic cable TV package. So why is that again? Well, it just so happens I know a few people that work at big TV stations down here, and one guy told me they run those three network stations in English because there are so many Latins deported from the States, mostly from the Florida, Texas, and California area. They speak enough English and live there long enough that they long to stay connected to the friends and families they left up there. And by the way, for all of you who've heard this rhetoric about how Latins in the States are starting to migrate back to their home countries here in Latin America because it's no good economically up there for them anymore. They can't find jobs and such. Well, I don't know who's pushing that propaganda or who started that rumor, but it ain't so. Well, I can tell you from personal experience, I've met a lot of people who've been deported, and every single one of them dreams of sneaking back up to the States and reconnecting with that life. And those are the guys who are watching those big three network channels in English. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh yeah, talking about how in the U.S., doctors write on average 12 prescriptions per capita per year. Now, I for one think that's pretty scary. Does it scare you? It should. Now, that topic naturally got me and the female doc talking about medical care here in Latin America. Then we discussed the pros and cons of not needing a prescription for practically anything here in Latin America. Then I said, you know, if there's 12 prescriptions per year per person on average in the States, I wonder how many prescriptions per person per year here in Latin America. Then I said, I bet because you can get any kind of medicine without a prescription, you couldn't even find any good data on that. And she said, oh, yes, you can, but you won't get that info through doctors down here. But if you ask the pharmacists, they'll give you the story. And it's true, pharmacists here in Latin America dispense most of their drugs without a prescription, though some prescriptions come in daily. Because people do get sick and go to the doctor, and docs will then write prescriptions. And according to our female first world doc, who'd done her duty as a do-gooder, Doctors Without Borders type, she said about one or two prescriptions per capita per year here in Latin America would be more like the norm. In other words, she said Americans take probably 7 to 10 times more prescription medicines than Latin Americans do. Of course, she said where you'll find gringos, you'll find a lot more prescriptions. For example, in Costa Rica. She said she'd spent some time there some 5 or so years ago and noticed that every time she stepped into or walked into a pharmacy, there were always more gringo customers in the place than local Latins. Oh, and one more thing about getting prescription medicines. She said that here in Latin America, even well off the gringo tourist trail, you can get all the proprietary medicines available at your stateside pharmacies. But since down here there are so few prescriptions written for very expensive high-end medicines, and low demand means low turnover, so they might just carry one proprietary brand and no generic. So it's true they carry most all medicines here, but you might not be able to get that very inexpensive generic. And if they don't have the generic, you'll pay first world prices for the proprietary brand. Like, for example, she said up in the States, common heart blood pressure medicine. If they have a generic, it could be half as expensive as the proprietary brand, though still quite expensive. When buying it up in the States, you know drug costs are extremely high up there. However, she said the generics here in Latin America are much, much cheaper than the very same generics up in the States. So it is all about supply and demand. So if you're down here and you're taking an oddball kind of medication, you'll be able to find it all right, but you may get stuck buying the original brand name, which could be expensive. So as for common prescription medicines like antibiotics, very, very inexpensive down here. You won't believe it. I mean, really, how about a week's supply? That means a full course of amoxicillin or tetracycline or Keflex for around $5 or $10. Now, I know some gringos pop antibiotics like candy. Not good, and you know why. Builds unwanted pathogen resistance, but we won't go into that. Except to say up where you are, antibiotics are vastly overprescribed, but not down here. That said, suppose you're down here in Latin America and you do take a very expensive arthritis medicine. Well, hopefully, just being down here, you'll have less stress and you'll eat a lot better. Maybe you won't have to take that medicine anymore. But if you do, you just might be paying first world prices for it at the pharmacy. However, there is a nice way to work around that. You can check out one of the dozens and dozens of online pharmacies that exist these days. I'm sure you've seen the pop-up windows, and a lot of those ads have landed in your spam box. Now, this lady doc said, stay away from the mail-order drug houses in India, but the ones in Canada, Europe, and Australia are just fine. And they'll sell the proprietary drug and all the available generics, too. Most times, if you shop around, you'll find them at amazingly low prices. However, you'll have to send a doctor's prescription to them. So does being in Latin America pose a problem there? Most of those online pharmacies will accept a prescription from a Costa Rican, Mexican, or any Latin doctor. The problem is most of those places will insist it's in English, which is not a problem either, since most Latin doctors speak English. By the way, they can call in the prescription too. Online pharmacies always have a toll-free number. So how will that normally work? Well, you get your prescription, scan it, send it as an attachment via email to, let's pick for example, a Canadian online pharmacy. Then you use PayPal, credit card, some even take Bitcoin. Yay! And they'll send it to your mailing address. Now, there's two little complications here. I've known people who've done that from here in Latin America, and here's what happens. Suppose you're living in Honduras, and a Honduran physician wrote a prescription. You scan it, send it to the Canadian pharmacy website. They reply, say they got it A-OK, you pay for it. Now, sometimes the online pharmacy will call the doctor whose phone number is on the prescription to verify it's legit. Fair enough, except the doctor generally doesn't answer his phone. It's the nurse or receptionist who speaks nothing but Spanish. That could hold things up and you'll get an email saying they couldn't get through to the doctor. Then you'll have to have your doctor call them. Luckily, they have a toll-free number. And of course, your doctor will speak some English. Almost all medical doctors do here. So that's a glitch that's easily remedied. Now, the second problem could be much more difficult to resolve. Now, after they've got your prescription from the doctor and you've sent them the money, Visa, MasterCard, whatever, you'll have given them your mailing address and such, but I suggest don't have it sent directly to the Latin country you're living in, because most of the time it'll get stuck in customs called the aduana. Again, the aduana, where, by the way, there's generally no lazier, fat-ass bunch of government slugs. And once it lands there, it could be stuck there for weeks. Meanwhile, you'll be waiting and waiting, and if there's a phone number to call, chances are it'll be busy all the time, and if someone picks up, it'll be in Spanish. I mean, do you ever try to call a government office and get anything done over the phone? Much less in English. Forget about it. Now, eventually, you'll get a notice to come down and pay something, or maybe not. And of course, there have been situations where things just get lost in the aduana and just never show up again. So how do you get around that? Easy. You have your medicines sent to one of those mail and freight forwarding services. Most of them are in Miami, by the way. And the cool thing is they're virtually 100% guaranteed to get your package through. And in past shows, I've mentioned how they work in great detail, so do check out the archives. So those freight and mail forwarding services out of Miami will handle all that aduana stuff, out of sight, out of mind for you. Not to mention, since shipping is their business, they have a special relationship with those government pinhead slugs, and generally get your stuff through in a couple days. Now, as you might remember, from a previous show I told you these freight forwarding companies charge by the pound. Most medicines, that goes for vitamins and supplements too, weigh under 1 pound. So if you use one of those mail forwarding services that charges, let's say, $6 to $8 a pound, that's all the extra dough you'll pay for bringing a medicine in from one of those mail order pharmacies. Hey, such a deal, huh? In fact, I know a lot of expats who've used that method and are quite happy with it. So again, using this arthritis example is a real case of someone who just went through ordering that stuff from an online pharmacy. So in this example, for 90 pills, a 90-day supply, it's something like $600. Because in Nicaragua, where they live, they don't have the generic. So he's got to pay for the original brand name. However, my friend located the very same medicine at a Canadian pharmacy called BestPriceRx.com. Of course, that's not the only outfit that carries it, but he said they had the best deal. 90 pills, $150. And that includes shipping anywhere in the States. So he had it shipped to his mail forwarding service in Miami, which has a flat fee of $7.50 a pound. And in a couple weeks, it came through A-OK, not a single problem. However, he said it could have been a nightmare if he had it shipped direct to his Latin address. By the way, a lot of people think, well, why don't you just ship it UPS or FedEx? Yes, they're here in all the Latin countries, except you're going to pay at least $50 to $100 just to get a letter, a document, or a small package through. Yes, it's outrageous, but if you need something in 2 or 3 days, or if you're shipping a very important document, they can do the job. So those are the little things, the ins and outs you learn once you've had some boots on the ground here in Latin America. And believe me, I know gringos who've been here in Latin America 3, 4, 5 years who are still shipping their stuff down to their Latin home address, thus having to deal with those idiot customs and aduana guys all the time, both on the phone and in person. But some guys just don't listen. They have to make every mistake themselves. Don't let that happen to you. Now, about this relatively young first world lady physician I was talking about. Well, as it turns out for her, she said she just got a divorce about 1.5 years ago, and that was enough to push her over the edge, though she was always thinking about a plan B. It was the ex-significant other that just didn't buy into it. She said he was a two-timer. That is, a two-time Obama voter. That explains everything. And now that, as she says, she's jettisoned that dead weight, she's back in the groove again and coming to my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. But she's here right now just for a week or two to get that Guatemalan residency started. Then she says she'll be back to the States to have a couple of rubbish sales and clear up a few details and be back again and maybe never leave, she says. So you can follow her lead, get your own Plan B started by coming to my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link, and you'll get all the information and sign-up details. That, along with some information that tells you how to kill two birds with one stone. How's that? Well, that would be applying for your temporary or permanent Guatemalan residency while you're down for the seminar. Oh, and don't forget, as mentioned on the last show, at this seminar, we'll have an extra business segment given by a very special guest entitled Making Money Online, because so many expats don't have a big nest egg and need to make money when they get down here. So how do you get started online? How do you make money online? This is a better question. Well, let's just say our special guest presenter is quite an expert at making that all happen. Being for a time, he was the single biggest one-person advertiser on Google. So if you come down to my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar, you'll get some golden nuggets on how to start an online business from one of the best. So again, we'll be in and around Guatemala. 90% of the time, we'll be well off the gringo tourist trail. In fact, there'll be days when you'll never see another gringo at all, except maybe a do-gooder. Or perhaps a backpacker, or maybe a pusbag embassy weenie. They're in every country, you know. In any event, you'll get to see amazing things the average gringo visitor never gets to see. That's a promise. It always works out that way. However, I do know a lot of you would like to move along on that plan B, but just can't get boots on the ground yet. That's why for you listeners and all the expat gonna-bes and wannabes out there, I put together my Expat Essentials audio course. If you want to find out the best ways to manage your own plan B, it's a great primer and exactly what you need to check out before you get boots on the ground. That's expatplanb.com. All right, that's it. Here's a little cautionary tale from Dave, another radio guy who's working on his plan B. If you heard his voice, you just might recognize him. Anyway, he says, Johnny, I'd spoken to you a few weeks ago about using a Visa, MasterCard, or debit cards in Latin America. Now, you can do that. Just a word of warning. You should really advise your banks beforehand about your travel plans. In fact, I called to advise one of my banks, and they said I had to come in and tell them the dates that I'd be traveling. However, with my other two credit cards, I was able to advise them of a travel notification right on their website. If not, the banks would have denied my withdrawals when I was traveling until I personally contacted them to tell them I was in another country. So what I'm saying is you really have to advise your bank of your travel. Do it before you travel. That'll make things go much more smoothly if you're using credit or debit cards. And he says, by the way, Johnny, I'm really excited about coming down and book my own flights already. I'll be down there on May 8th, and I'll be staying in one of the places you recommend. He says, I can't believe I'm getting so much accomplished so fast. It's really taking the apprehension out of this trip. Thanks to you, Jen Galt, from the John Galt Trips and Expat Concierge Service, and Peter, the Lake Atitlan landlord contact you gave me for rentals. Thanks again, Johnny. Dave. All right, Dave. Thanks for giving us a heads up on what the banks are doing. Now, Dave, in the last 6 months or so, I've heard other stories about banks refusing credit card transactions when someone was traveling outside the States. And later, that person would get on his bank or credit card website to explain he was traveling out of the country, and then things would be activated again. You know what? I think the words of Neil Armstrong ought to be updated here. How about this? One small slap in the face for man, and one giant step backward for mankind. You know, Dave, life used to be so much easier, huh? Even now, in the last 6 months or so, it's become harder and harder to turn your U.S. funny money into the local Latin funny money. Though the big Latin banks will still let you walk in, whip out your passport, and they'll change $100 to $200 a day. Even that's getting tougher to do. Which makes it a lot easier to hang out in countries that use the U.S. dollar. Panama, El Salvador, Belize, and Ecuador. Meaning you could take a decent wad of U.S. dollars down to one of those four countries and you don't have to change it to the local funny money. Because you've got that funny money right in your hands, the U.S. dollar. And the downside of other countries using U.S. dollars as their currency is that they're way too connected to the U.S. government. They have to be, because if they use the U.S. dollar as their currency, their central banks are intimately tied into the creature from Jekyll Island, the Federal Reserve. Now, as mentioned, Ecuador uses the U.S. dollar. I get a lot of emails about Ecuador, you know. It's always been on my list as a very good place to be an expat, but it's slowly losing that position. It's all about those thieving, money-hungry government bureaucrats again. Just listen to this email sent to me by an Expat Insider Seminar attendee, Kelsey, who's in and out of Ecuador, among other Latin countries. And I'll paraphrase this a bit. The email says, "If you go to Ecuador, don't forget to take a good look around. Because everything you see as of last year, 2016, the Ecuadorian government owns 5% of it. I'm talking about everything. Even the cash in your pocket over $1,000. How can you say that? Well, that's because the government put a capital control on society, mandating an instant tax of 5% when attempting to take your money out of Ecuador. It could be a bank wire, Western Union, no matter. Even if you have cash in your pocket at the airport, you'll be hit with a 5% tax on all your cash over $1,000 and any assets you have. And if you don't declare the money and they catch it, you could lose all of it." Then the email says, "What if you're heavily invested in Ecuador because you didn't see the warning signs, and now you want out without getting hit with that tax? Well, there's no legal quick fix. You're simply going to have to pay that tax, especially if your time is limited and you want to get your money out fast. However, if you have plenty of time, there is one legal way to beat this situation, at least for now. That is to get a local Ecuadorian bank credit card and use that for all your purchases, even abroad. Now remember, it's a U.S. dollar country. It'll be a U.S. dollar credit card, so you can use it anywhere. No currency conversions. Here's the thing, and many don't realize this, but the new 5% tax was passed in May of 2016. Then, when they realized how truly draconian it was, they pulled back just a little. In July, the government rolled that tax back, just on credit card purchases abroad, up to $5,000. So, you can spend up to $5,000 on credit cards anywhere without accruing this tax, at least for now. So, get that Ecuadorian credit card and spend away. Pay with Ecuador U.S. dollar money. But you have to get that credit card, right? So how do you get a credit card in Ecuador if you're a foreigner? Well, it's not easy at all. Hey, it's me, Johnny, again. You know, the only way to get a bank account these days in any Latin country, that'd be any foreign country, is first, you have to have residency or have applied for residency. Then your lawyer can take you down to the bank and get an account and get a debit or credit card. You know, of course, if your Spanish sucks, you'll have to have a lawyer maneuver things for you. And even if your Spanish is good, you'll need someone to sign for you, preferably a professional person, like a doctor, an accountant, or a lawyer, to give you what they call a carta de recomendación. That's a written recommendation that you're a good, honest, trustworthy guy or gal and all that. By the way, there is another way to get a bank account and a credit card if you're not a resident or haven't applied for residency, and that is to get yourself an SA corporation, which will then get that bank account along with credit cards and debit cards in that corporation's name. And you being a signatory, owner, or employee of that SA corporation, you can have a credit or debit card. And to get all that going, you will absolutely need a Latin lawyer. So that's the workaround to get a bank account if you're not a resident. However, if you're a resident, it's fairly easy. Which begs the question, where are you on your Latin residency trajectory? That window of opportunity is closing and it's getting harder and harder to get those things accomplished. So I do hope you've got that plan B moving forward. That said, for all you listeners interested in becoming an expat in Ecuador, I've been reporting on the increasingly problematic tax situation there over the past few shows. And from that email, you can see their intent on milking gringos, because who else is going to send money out of the country? Oh, and by the way, speaking of having a business in Ecuador or a startup, here's something I'm sure you didn't know, but it's kind of scary too. Did you know that Ecuadorian law requires all private companies, that would be you if you started a legit company there, to distribute 15% of your pre-tax profits to your employees every year? What? Have you ever heard of such a thing? So what does that do? Well, I can tell you, it discourages gringos from starting businesses that are on the books, which is why so many gringos and expats end up with internet businesses, because they're in the ether. They're not brick and mortar, and they can exist off the books, or at least in other jurisdictions. Oh, and here's another reason gringos don't like to have businesses on the books in Ecuador. This quote I got from an Ecuadorian business journal. It says, "In general, the legal complexity in Ecuadorian law resulting from the inconsistent application and interpretation of existing laws complicates enforcement of contracts and increases the risks and costs of doing business in Ecuador. Business disputes with U.S. companies, for example, can become politicized, especially in sensitive areas such as energy, mining, and communications. In fact, there are now ongoing many high-level investment disputes involving U.S. companies, some of which are now under international arbitration." Then it says, "Ecuador's economic, commercial, and investment policies are contradictory and subject to change. Note, the regulatory framework has specifically targeted the banking and media sectors, negatively affecting these industries, and frequent changes in Ecuador's tax codes make business planning difficult." All right, so there's the bad and the ugly for anyone thinking of going to Ecuador and starting a brick-and-mortar business, you know, bed and breakfast, hotel, restaurant. However, most parts of Ecuador are still up there on my list, because it's a very nice, laid-back place to live, play, and or retire, as long as you have an outside source of income, like a pension or Social Security, and or a nice nest egg that's not dependent on you making a living in Ecuador. It's not that you can't have a nice business there, it's just that the government's making it harder and harder.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.